Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted. And we've really been branching out lately. Of course, we're still covering all the stars of the paranormal world and what they have going on, what they're doing on their TV shows. Seems like we've talked to almost everyone from every show on sci-fi. I was just running up the stairs, by the way, hence my out-of-breathedness. And the Travel Channel shows, of course, and bio and whatnot. We've been all over the place. But tonight, we have something, someone, really different and very interesting, yet I think you will find very fitting. Teresa, are you with us?
I am. Hello, everyone. Hey, Eric. Good to see you're getting a little exercise running up the steps.
Yeah, I realized I had, 20 seconds until the show was going live, and by golly, I better get on up those stairs. Now, I hope Gloria knows she's supposed to call in. I thought I made a big point of that, but let's see here. We will chat in the meantime because we have plenty to say. Anyway, our guest this evening is the one and only Gloria Loring. And if that name sounds familiar, it should, because she was a soap opera goddess on Days of Our Lives. I hear tittering in the background. I think perhaps there might be a goddess with us. Another goddess. But let's talk about her book. So let me give a little intro to that. And, of course, we're extremely happy to have Gloria here. Gloria Loring would tell you that coincidence, a coinciding of meaningful events, is trying to get your attention. She would also quote Albert Einstein. Holy cow, how did he get involved? In her new book title, Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, Reflections on Daytime Dramas and Divine Intervention. And sure, it's a celebrity autobiography because she's a celebrity and she wrote it, so it's an autobiography. But what I really think it is, and if you guys want all the other cool bio stuff, please do read the rest of our extensive scribbling right there on the show page. But we're really interested in getting going, talking with Gloria. And what I think the book is it's three things. There's certainly a self-help element, but I think that's just a result of the fact that she was so honest with herself and obviously kind of learned a lot about herself in the course of writing the book. But it's also a really interesting philosophical study as well as a spiritual study. And it is an amazing book, and I recommend it to anyone and everyone, even if you've never watched Days of Our Lives, which I have not. Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you so much. I love it. The soap opera goddess.
Heck yeah.
I
was just watching, some of these real recent, it's within the last certainly few years, live performances. Of course, I'm looking up your bio and everything, so I know key statistics like age and stuff. And I go, there's no way that woman is that age. You look fantastic, and you move very youthfully. Your voice is still great. And, of course, we didn't mention that. Your entire career really is based upon you being a singer. That's how you got started. That's how you entered showbiz and ended up on the Merv Griffin Show. And, of course, ended up having a huge hit, Friends and Lovers. So we certainly don't want to leave that out. But I guess the core of what we're talking about, because it's most relevant to our greater theme, which is, of course, America's Most Haunted, is your book. So why don't you give our listeners just a bit of a summary of how you came about to do the book and perhaps some thoughts on how you came to view the importance and of coincidence.
Well, I think an overview would be that I always had a talent. I could sing. And when I sang, I felt important, and I felt terrific and valuable and loved and all that good stuff. But I was raised in a home where there was alcoholism. My parents are both good people. But, you know, alcoholism can sure mess up a family and cause a lot of dysfunction. And there was, what I recount in the book, at least one occasion of inappropriately sexualized contact with my father, which had a profound effect on me. I didn't truly come to terms with until much later in my life. But most of all, I think my view in the world was I had to go out and make things happen. That I was the one, and if I did it, it got done. And, you know, I was always trying to manage my environment. Not quite a control freak, but somewhere going in that direction. I really thought that I felt, I think, at the deepest core of my being, that I was alone in the world. And along the way, with events happening to me, which I recount in the book, I started to see these clues coming back from life itself, from, you could say, God, you could say the magnificent intelligence that inhabits the universe. Carl Jung called it the connecting principle. And it started to show me that there was something larger than me at work. And along the way, one of the stories, it's the first chapter in the book, I recount how I raised $1 million for diabetes research. My little son, Brennan, my older son, had been diagnosed with diabetes. Then I joined the cast of Days of Our Lives, and I had promised Brennan that I would do something to try to make his diabetes better. And I knew that, you know, raising money for research was a really good idea. And I found that when I was on Days of Our Lives that people were trading recipes, and I came up with this idea to create a Days of Our Lives celebrity cookbook. And I went out and I told everybody, and I, you know, I'm a very much a participant in my life, and I like to make things happen and produce things. And although this was new for me, you know, fundraising and creating a publishing company and all of that, that was very new. But I got to a point where I'd done everything I knew to do. And the one thing that was missing was I didn't have the $40,000 to print the cookbooks. And I remember thinking, something has to happen. We didn't come this far and get this close to have this thing fail now. Something's got to happen. And something did. A little clue came back to me from, what, life, the universe, that magnificent intelligence. A little card showed up in my dressing room that said, expect a miracle at Days of Our Lives. Mysteriously, to this day, I don't know where it came from. I asked people. Nobody would fess up. But the very next day, 24 hours later, I met the benefactor who helped me pay for the printing for the cookbook, thereby starting the process that raised $1 million for diabetes research. And now I've got this little card that says, expect a miracle. And what do I do with it? You know, I threw it in the bottom of my carry bag because I thought at the time I saw it, I thought, well, this isn't mine. I was going to throw it away, and then it seemed stupid to throw away a card that said, expect a miracle. So I carried it around for a year, and finally, a year later, I saw it in the bottom of my bag, and it was stained, and it was dented, and it was had scratches on it. But I thought, well, this is amazing. We're on our way to raising, by that time, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. We'd already reprinted, we'd printed 100,000 books that went out. We were going to do volume two. And I said, I got to save this card. Well, it's framed on my office wall. And along the way, I was talking to somebody like you, Eric, and I was telling them the story of the little card, expect a miracle, meeting the benefactor, raising $1 million. And I said, isn't that an amazing coincidence? And this fellow, like you, very wisely said to me, yes, but you know, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And you know, there are things that come along in your life and they just hit you real strongly. And at that moment, I had absolutely no framework within which to hold any of this information. But I said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Let me get a pencil. I got to write that down. That is so cool. I had no idea what it truly meant, but I knew I wanted to remember it. And so, you know, as we will do, I started using it whenever I would tell them story of how we raised $1 million because I felt
like
cool
when you ordered lunch and stuff.
Well, yeah, I would, you know, I'd be talking to an interviewer and they'd say,
sorry,
now tell us about the cookbook. You know,
I didn't interrupt.
I know you're just a rascal. And I'd say, tell me how you raised $1 million. And I'd say, and the card and what a coincidence. But then, you know, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And I kept repeating this phrase because it sounded so cool. And I loved feeling like I was cool as opposed to being cool. But along the way, I started to see over those next several years a series of mind-bending coincidences that happened to me, some of them very quickly, some of them took over time. some of them as mysterious as anything anyone could ever have happened in their life. And I started to realize that there was something going on here. And I didn't think I was special or extraordinarily lucky, because I knew whenever I would start talking about coincidence to people, their ears would perk up, their eyes would brighten. And I thought, you know, there's something here. People know about this. They when I say coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous, people respond. Because I've been, you know, quoting this quote for 25 years. And, yeah, so it was along the way. It was about over 12 years ago. I started to write the stories down, my stories, of the, how these coincidences had unfolded. And it was just a perfect time of creation for me, because I was also starting to write, I was writing a whole bunch of songs at the time. I was very filled with these stories and these ideas and these principles, and so that's why every chapter of the book has its own song lyric that accompanies it, and they're all on a separate CD called Turn the Page that's on my website and iTunes and all of that. But I got so fascinated with this subject. So what is it that coincidence is? How does it happen? Where does it come from? And since Albert Einstein said this quote, where is the intersection of scientific observation and spiritual understanding? And that's what set me on this course. It took me so long to finish this book, 12 years. But all along that time, I was watching for the clues. I was talking to people. I was gathering stories. I was deepening my understanding, so that now that the book is finished, it's sort of like, it's like my thesis, you know? It's my sort of life PhD thesis. And I want people to read it and start to have their own questions and their own answers from it. And I'm getting that kind of response from folks, which is very exciting.
That was about the best answer to a question I've ever heard.
Well, you said, how did it all start?
Boy, did you lay it out there. And you know what? I cannot talk about coincidence. Teresa, and I haven't introduced Teresa, my co-host,
yes,
to Gloria.
Hello, Gloria.
Hey,
how
Teresa.
You?
Very good. Thank you. So nice to meet you.
We're writing a book.
Thank you for being on the show. Yeah.
Thank you. So you're writing a book.
Yeah.
We are
and
writing
it's
a book.
America's Most Haunted. And,
I love it.
If I had to summarize where my personal perspective is on the whole topic that is summarized, you know, yeah, sure, it's kind of a glib title, America's Most Haunted. We couldn't believe it was available. We couldn't believe it had never been used. It was like a joke. I think my older daughter said, yeah, why don't you try America's Most Haunted, because it sounded like America's Most Wanted, and you know, just
yes,
has that real, it has that sort of iconic sound to it. And then we looked it up, and oh, my God, no one had ever used it. It was unbelievable. But anyway, my perspective on this and what I'm trying to work out perhaps for myself is exactly what you just said about that nexus, that meeting point between science and spirituality. It really is quite amazing that you just said that, because I kind of been trying to come up with a boiled down, you know, really the crux of it, the crucible of what it is that I'm looking for, and that's it. I want to be open-minded. I want to be open to the spiritual in its many manifestations in the world, in the universe, in my life. But I also don't want to be foolish, and I don't want to be naive.
Yeah.
And so I want that scientific, that objective side of it too. And where those two things come together, that's gold.
I agree with you, and I think that's why it took me so long, is because I wanted to truly have, I didn't want to go off sort of half-baked, you know. I said to, I did the Marie show the other day, and I said, she said, why did it take you 12 years? I said, I needed a lot of time to marinate in this information, you know. And the more I did, you know, I mean, perfectly reasonable people, when I would talk to them about my book and I'm writing this book and it's coincidence, it's God's way, and they would, and I'd say, you know, I had a past life regression with Dr. Brian Weiss, and my neck had bothered me for a year and a half, and he took me back, and I was a warrior with a shield, and I, you know, re-experienced this thing, and I picked up the body of me as this soldier, and this is all in my book, and my neck got better. After a year and a half, you know, I had no expectation of that. It just happened. So these mysteries, they make life such a fascinating struggle of understanding, because anything can happen. See, people sometimes get scared off when you say spiritual spirit, you know. Well, excuse me, spirit is your essential energy. We know the whole universe, scientific observation, is made of energy. It's made of vibrational frequency and energy. Your essential energy animates your body. When you die, there's a body there, but it's not moving, and it actually weighs less than it did just before you died. So energy, the essential energy, the spirit of your being, has presence and power and actual some kind of volume, which we don't quite understand. But these things are starting to be measured. And just as, you know, there was a time when we thought, oh, the world is flat, because that's all we could see, because that's all our instruments gave us access to. And then the instruments expanded, and then we started to have a bigger understanding and a bigger vision. And now with outer space and travel and looking back on the Earth, and, you know, I mean, there is so much. It's very exciting. So when somebody tells me, you know, my dead husband climbed up the stairs and got in bed with me and gave me a hug, I don't say, okay, sure, honey. I say, wow, was that real for you? They say, yes, I could feel him. I felt his, I mean, my heart just swelled, and I go, wow, that's beautiful. I'll give you an example. I had a woman I knew years ago, and I did this past life regression thing that's in the book on, what was it? Oh, the Vicki Show. Remember Vicki Lawrence had a talk show?
Of course.
And I had had all this problem with my neck, and here's the coincidence. I got so sick of, I could hardly turn my head. And I woke up one morning and I said, I am so tired of this. And I looked up. This is usually the way I pray. I just like throw things up there and I say, okay, I am so tired of this. Would you please help me fix this? And that's my idea of a prayer. So anyway, I just threw it out into the universe. And a week later, I get asked, you know, have you ever had any kind of like past life regression? They're doing a thing on the Vicki Show, and they were interested if you had any experience with that. And I was able to say, quite honestly, that the month before, I'd had a dream about burning to death. And I know what it's like to burn to death. I know what it's like to burn to death. I felt the embers in my lungs, and I became ash. And I kept saying, wait a minute, I went to bed in Sherman Oaks last night. I'm Gloria. I can't be burning to death. And then I died, and I was complete ash. And there was nothing left but consciousness floating in space. And then I woke up. And so I said, well, I had this really strange dream about burning to death. And they said, that's close enough. So so they invited me to regressed. You're on, honey. In this like little room with, you know, the sound guy and the little dressing room down at NBC. Not, you know, not your normal setting for a transcendent experience, but it's okay. And they regress me, and I go back, and Brian Weiss is like the coolest guy. And he used to be a Freudian Harvard-trained analyst, you know. And then he started to get this information from a client about his parents' lives. There's no way she could know that. He never spoke about his personal life to anybody. And then she knew private information about a child, a baby they had lost. And, I mean, it was, and he said, wait a minute, there is more here. See, there's the thing that I love about what you're saying about having that open mind and saying, wait a minute, okay, this happened to me. I have a chapter in my book called Trust Your Experience. If something happens to you, even though you don't have a way to explain it yet, I mean, I didn't have a way to explain that card that came into my dressing room, but it set me on a journey, the very inkling of the beginning of a journey that has transformed my life. I love Andrew Weil says mystics those who delve into the mysteries, mystics believe there is a conspiracy in the universe on their behalf.
I love that. It's a positive. What an optimistic view. And, you know, again, I absolutely see that and buy into that. And I found in my own life, I kind of have veered at different times of my life between having a pretty actively optimistic view, and I think fundamentally I'm optimistic. But then I've also allowed myself to kind of be plagued with doubt, self-doubt.
Sure.
You know, doubt in others, doubt in how I'm perceived. And
yes.
And the results, I mean, just looking at a purely practical standpoint, the results are always vastly better when I'm in my optimistic mode, which I do feel is my fundamental mode. So you might as well function that way. But again, then, you know, that's tempered a little bit. There's always that little voice in there saying, all right, but you don't want to be foolish. You don't want to be naive. Teresa,
well,
I know the stuff we're talking about, you have all kinds of thoughts on. So why don't you step in?
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely fascinating, the book and what you've gone through. And, you know, I've got a million questions. I'm going to try to keep on topic here. Would you say, and this is my view of this, like what happened to you as a child and how it was something you couldn't talk about, you didn't quite understand it,
yes.
Especially being as young as you were when it happened and being with a family member so close, and it can only imagine a child's mind trying to process that. And so then, and I think this is not just for you, for other people who have gone through similar things, maybe not exactly the same, but similar sort of traumas. Because it's such a negative thing that happens, whether they realize it or not, what's happening to them inside them, in their minds and in their hearts, is so negative that without even knowing, maybe they're putting that negativity out. And maybe this is why people who have been abused, some of them grow up to be abusers themselves if they don't deal with it, if they don't find a way to process that and deal with it and get over that. It's the energy that's being put out, whether they realize it or not, is negative. So negative energy attracts more negative energy. This is just
yes.
My theory. And I think that when you've overcome it, when you process it, when you start to deal with it, and you start deciding to be positive and deciding to do good things and work for raising money for diabetes and moving past this and finding out what's inside and what makes Gloria tick, and then all these wonderful positive things come back. And I think that it's amazing. I think, but it's true. And you can't scientifically define that. You can't test that. You know, that's God working within us. I don't think that our lives are written out. I don't think that there's one script and there's only one way that it's going to happen. I think that
no.
God has given us, or whoever you believe in, if you don't believe
yeah.
in God, the universe has given us options, and we choose, we make our own path. But there is, God does have a hand in that, and he does guide us, or at least try to guide us to a better way. And I think that somebody who's come across something so negative, like you did, but has turned it into such a positive, and I applaud you for being able to speak on this. I know that you haven't always spoke about this, that this is relatively new that you actually talk about it, not just write
yes,
about it. And
yes.
I know how painful that must be. But what we do in the paranormal, when I do research and we look for things, and people try to quantify it scientifically, and for me it's not so much about doing that. It's more about connecting with the spirits and the energy. Like you said, your energy, when you die, it's still energy. Where does that energy go?
Mm-hmm,
and I think
mm-hmm.
that's why people have issues with so-called bad spirits or bad energies. Maybe that's just what they were giving off when they died, and that's what lingers. It doesn't automatically just change, I don't think. So
I don't know as much. I've certainly done some reading. I've done a lot of reading about near-death experience, past life regression, that sort of thing. the great gift of coincidence in this lifetime, I can't speak for the other side because I haven't been there, but the experience I have in this lifetime, and what you're saying, Teresa, is so valid. When we have these great traumas, especially when they get hidden, you know, the human body, the human brain, can only absorb so much trauma. And it's the reason mm-hmm. people go into comas. It's the reason people forget. you know, the mind just goes, I can't deal with this, and it pushes it aside. But then it will sometimes come in your 20s, 30s, 40s, it'll come up as flashbacks, dreams. And we know the statistics are just mind-boggling. That of they did one study of people in their 20s on drugs and alcohol with problems in, you know, trying to recover. 80% of them had been abused and neglected as children. So
yeah,
this has a profound effect on spirit. I remember when I was on with Dr. Drew and I told this story for the first time, spoke it out loud as opposed to writing it. It was very emotional. Yeah, I was very emotional. And I said, you know, I really experienced that a part of myself just kind of shattered off. And he said, now he's relating to it as a psychiatrist, but he said, that's exactly what happens to the brain. The brain sort of shatters. And for me, what I experienced was a part of my spirit actually leaving my body, escaping. And it took me many, many years to bring that part of self. There's a tradition, you know, speaking of the so-called paranormal, the beyond what we think of as normal, although in other realms it might be like, oh, well, yeah, that's normal. In some of the Native American traditions, they have ceremonies when someone has been shattered by war, by trauma, whatever. They actually have ceremonies where they help them bring their spirit back into their body. Isn't this interesting? You know, the indigenous peoples know about the power of a split in our spirit, of a part of ourselves that we've disowned. And that's what happens. That's what I want so much to talk about, and I'm starting to get a chance now to let people know. And I've had women contact me, and you know, through Facebook or email, whatever, and just say, thank you for talking about this. I am just now, I'm 46, I'm just starting to deal with what my stepfather did to me. It's so hard. But I do know that they will say that the fact that you told your truth is helping me not feel so alone in this. Not like I'm the odd person out here, you know, like I'm the weird one and everybody else is perfectly normal. Because when these things happen to our spirit, they can break off. And that's probably, not that I know about this very much, but that's probably some of the impetus for spirit in paranormal who are restless and unsettled and can't find home, and you know what I mean, who can't go toward the light, who
absolutely, and that's why we have spirits. There's a theory in the paranormal that spirits, sometimes the spirit has remained because of something so traumatic that happened to them, either in life or at the moment of their death, and maybe that's part of that, the brain shattering, and part of their spirit, whatever energy, whatever part of that is remaining, because we know, obviously, it's not their whole person, because not, it's spirit, and that, I never thought of that, but that makes perfect sense. Whether it was the moment of their death or something that happened that they haven't resolved or never dealt with, that part has remained because it wasn't resolved. It hasn't been fixed, so to speak. It hasn't been cleansed. It's not ready maybe to join the rest of it in the hereafter. Who knows?
And they may not forgive themselves. They may have such rage or a sense of revenge or justification for you know, the righteous, what should have been a righteous thing, you know, that wasn't dealt with. And I mean, you know, and we know, I mean, for those of us who understand that we come back again, you know, there isn't just one life. Now, there's a big subject, and I would probably only talk about that with you guys or people who are into more depth of spirit. You know, there are things that we come back to atone for. I have a friend who's in a relationship right now that is so detrimental to her. Oh, my God, so detrimental. But she is bound by some ancient karma to be in this relationship, to try to, heal it somehow, no matter the cost to herself. And I was able to be helpful up until a certain point when the truth started to come out, and then I couldn't be helpful anymore. And boy, the letting go process, because I said I'm like somebody who likes to pat things down and be productive and just get in there and make everything right. And what great lesson of letting go and letting someone have their own journey in their own way, and, you know, But it's hard. It's when you see someone who is engaged in behavior that is harmful to them. But when they have a larger calling, something they're trying to atone for, an expiation of sorts, who knows where that came from? Who knows?
Wow, that's got to be tough when you see somebody going down that path. But it is. There's only so much you can do to interfere. I think it's fascinating when you talk about past lives and past life regression as well. That's a subject you can totally talk about with us. My religious beliefs, we didn't. That's not the way I was raised, but after the work that I've done in the paranormal, it's just, I can't dismiss it. I just absolutely cannot. And I have some very good friends who totally believe that. And they know all sorts of things about their past lives. And I've never done a past life regression because my biggest fear is that I do a past life regression and found out that my life was exactly the same in the past life. I was a waitress or a server or a slave or something. So I wasn't Cleopatra. Everybody's always these grand figures in history. I'm like, I'd probably be somebody's slave or something, just some waitress or something. That's my fear.
More rum, wench.
Yeah, exactly. That would be my luck, you know.
Just one more wench, I know, in a long chain of wenches.
You know, there's a lot to be said for wenches. I'm a fan of wenches. I'm giving the big thumbs up right now.
That's
I don't even
funny.
Have to go to past lives to appreciate wenches.
I know. It's a guy thing. Yeah, it doesn't interest me, but I can hear you.
You know what's really interesting in hearing you talk. First of all, you're extremely intelligent and articulate, and I mean, absolutely. I cannot think of a guest we've had. We have people who are, you know, typically a lot of the people we have on are investigators who are on the various paranormal investigation shows. So this is what they do, and this is their life. And they've researched all this. They have degrees in parapsychology and on and on and on. But you are extremely articulate and, of course, charming and whatnot, too. What I noticed, though, just kind of taking the arc of what you've been talking about so far, is it sounds to me like you kind of pieced together your own spirituality. And I'm really interested in that process. What began that process? Obviously, it ties into your view of coincidences. But it's just simply the fact that you are open-ended or open-minded with defining God and the fact that you do incorporate, you know, what is traditionally a non-Christian perspective of multiple lives, reincarnation and karma and that kind of thing. And I'm real interested kind of in the process that brought you to where you are now. You are also the whole philosophical side of it, the Jungian and that's, you know, that's some pretty heavy stuff that you have pieced together in what coming from you sounds like a very, very coherent worldview.
Yeah, I guess it is now. Well, again, that's, as I said, that's why I think I took so long to write this book, is I kept looking for the evidence. I mean, you know, I call it evidence-based living, EBL, evidence-based living.
That's a great saying, by the way. That's a great saying. I love that.
You look around you, you know, you might say, oh, you know, nothing good ever happens to me. Excuse me, you got up this morning. You brushed your teeth. That's good. You know what I mean?
You were born in the first place.
Yeah,
just
we're born.
Sperm
I
one.
Mean, that's pretty cool, you know. So as we start to look at the actual evidence of our lives, too many of us have things that come out of our mouth that make no sense. I mean, I had some of those things. I called them hold it lines. A hold it line is an improvisational acting technique. See, I started to see this continuum. It probably started to take form especially because I was studying ancient yoga philosophy. And these ancient philosophies don't point you toward one particular form of what they call Brahman or the great ground of being. They're very huge philosophical terms. That's why they can have so many gods, thousands of them in the Hindu. You know, everybody goes, oh, you're Shiva. Oh, you're a Krishna person. Oh, you're a Kali Durga person. You know, oh, you follow Saraswati. You know, it doesn't matter because they all know it's all the same thing. It's just different names and aspects. It's like, you know, we're the human race and I'm the Gloria and you're the Eric and you're the Teresa. You know, that's about the way it is. But what's the ground of being, the foundational element, the spirit that comes through us? And they call it the self with a capital S. And the self, there's only one self. It is consciousness, being, and bliss that inhabits the whole universe. Well, we know that also as spirit would be self. And Native Americans call it the great spirit. So I started looking for where's the continuum? What are the things that keep showing up again and again? The perennial philosophy, the perennial wisdom. And then, of course, I had these experiences that I recount in my book where I realized it wasn't that I needed to have the love. I was the love. The love was self-existent within me. I didn't need to do anything to get it. I didn't need to go anywhere to have it. I didn't need to please anyone. I didn't need to sing or not sing. It just was. It existed within me. And once you've had some of those, what Maslow called peak experiences, he started out evidently, I was reading today, calling them mystical experience, and that was a little too airy-fairy for the scientific community. So he called them peak experiences. But we know. I mean, if you read William James, The Varieties of Religious Experience, it doesn't matter.
I have. It's amazing.
It's a fabulous book. It doesn't
it
matter
really
if
is.
You're a Christian or a Jew or a Sufi or, you know, a Buddha. When you get a Buddhist, when you get down below and you go to your original self, you go to the true self, the ground of being that joins up with the great ground of being from whence we come, the magnificent intelligence and creativity that brought us into being and that still resides within our own being, waiting for us to access it. It is there. And I really believe, and I talk about this in my book, that this whole life, and perhaps however many lives you want to think you have or not have, this life and the other ones is about returning to wholeness, letting go of those things that separate you from the truth of your being, from who you truly are. And coincidence will lead you, and intuition, which is the inner form of coincidence, intuition and coincidence will lead you toward the clues of what you're attracting that you may not want any longer in your life, and what you're running from that may be time to face.
Wow. That's some heavy stuff. That really sums it up. I think you said it, but just to make it explicit, it sounds to me, and what feels right to me, is that the essence of all of those varieties of religious experiences are mm-hmm. ultimately the same.
Yes, and I have some quotes in the book. I don't have them in front of me right now, but there's one, and I've forgotten who it is, but who says in all 10 directions or in all the religious, they're basically the same. And the great beings, you know, if you get a really high-level spiritual being who's gone down below, because, you know, like right now, if I were sitting here, I'd say, oh, well, I'm Gloria Loring. And then if I let go of Gloria Loring, I'd say, oh, well, I'm a woman. And then I'd say, oh, I'm an American. And I'd keep going layers down, down, down. And, oh, I'm a citizen of the world. And I would get bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh, I'm a member of the human race. And then I might get down to, I'm spirit. And then you get down, 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 down to before you had a name. What was my name before somebody told me what my name was? I don't know. You know? What's the ground of my being? And the ground of my being is the ground of your being, is the ground of everyone's being. We all come from the same place. We exist within the same realm of possibility. And we're all here, I think, to learn how to love each other, love ourselves, let go of what we no longer need. And coincidence will help you do that.
And somewhere in there, too, I don't think it goes as deep as the final layer you were talking about, because that just kind of transcends everything. But somewhere along that way is the human commonality, and that's Jung as well, and that's the collective subconscious. And I have always found that to be an amazing and really very helpful kind of concept, in that if you visualize it, we're all kind of poking up. We as individuals are poking up out of the ground, and yet below the surface, we're all connected. And we can all connect with each other in a very real and meaningful way on that level.
Yes, absolutely. If you've ever sat in a whole room, huge room of people meditating together, the power of people letting go of their individual limitations, their limited ideas about themselves, which we call, you know, ego. Ego is your individual sense of self. Ego's not a bad thing. Ego's a good thing. It's cool. Just depends on how you use it. You know, it's kind of like anger. Depends on how you use it. If you use anger to propel you forward, to show somebody, wait a minute, they said I can't do, I'm going to show them I can do. Ha-ha! You know? So ego is the same thing. When you're with a whole group of people and they let go of their individual self and they move down more toward the collective self, toward what connects them to the people next to them, and they get into that same vibrational frequency of peace and quiet and original self, the power of the state is phenomenal. I've had those experiences, immersion experiences, and they're so beautiful. And once you've had some of those, you know you've experienced. It's not a belief that you have. It's a tangible understanding that you've experienced in your own body that we are connected and that there's something we all share.
Well, Gloria, let me ask you a question. Talking along those terms, and let me know if you agree with this or not. I understand what you're saying about letting go of the ego and the individuality and the collective consciousness of the world. But, and Nance, tell me if this happened for you personally. Sometimes I think a lot of the problems that people have is because they have no sense of self. They don't know who their identity is. So in order for them to be comfortable enough to kind of let go and become part of something bigger, they can't do that because they're too confused of who they are as an individual.
Yeah.
For me personally, I don't really have any sense of self until I became a mother. Honestly, I felt like I was just kind of bouncing around in the universe with no direction, kind of scattered, kind of lost until I became a mother. And maybe it's because then I was focusing on someone else. But I think that all my strength, and I'm a very, believe me, I'm not a super mom at all. I'm very, you know, I have a definite sense of who I am now, and I have things that I work for outside of, you know, what I do with my family. But I think it kind of took that for me to realize I am not just a woman, I'm not just Teresa, I'm a mother, I have a greater purpose. And for me, that gave me a sense of identity for myself, which then I was able to kind of let myself be a part of something else. And I think a lot of people that have a lot of mental issues and maybe addiction problems, they don't have an identity. I don't think they're comfortable with who they are. Maybe they don't know who they are. So for you,
it's a very complex issue, isn't it? It's very complex.
It is.
Because on the one hand, they do know who they are, but they define who they are in a very limiting, disempowering way. My teacher, my meditation teacher, said something that just blew my mind. And she said, whether you think you're better than or less than, that is ego. And I said, my head whipped around and I'm thinking, what? I always thought better than was ego.
Right.
But you see, when we feel... The great beings see equality, see equanimity in everyone. They see God in everyone they look at. So when we think we're less than someone, that's ego is you're defining your limited self, right? So then we're smaller than, so we're limiting and defining our ego this way. Or if I'm better than I'm defining my ego by saying, well, see, I'm so much better than him or her, you know. Now, we take on an identity, yes, your motherhood has contributed to your identity, but the thing we have to remember as someone who has watched her children grow up and leave home, that is a role you play. It is not mm-hmm. who you are. It is a role you play, because you would say, I am a mother, I am a wife, I am a girlfriend, I am a sister, I am a journalist, I am a this, I am a that. Those are all roles that we play. I was a sister. My sister passed this last year. Okay? So, you know, I mean, I was an active mother. Now I'm, you know, now I'm Nana. So, you know, the roles change. But ultimately what we start to imbibe if we really go deeply enough is we start to realize that there's something underneath us that fuels and fires the I am-ness of us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if tomorrow your daughter's 18 or your son, I don't know, and moves out and now you're no longer an active mother. And women go through that, and fathers too, mothers and fathers. And now, you know, now what do I do with myself? Oh, you know, it's jarring because, you know, you were a wife and you get divorced and now you're not a wife. And, well, but that was my purpose in life. Well, maybe your purpose in life is to play whatever role you're given to the best of your ability. So finding an identity in a role is a great thing. But sooner or later, that role is going to change shape and form. So while we're playing a role, we can find the power of what we're able to access within ourselves and take that forward into other roles we might play. Does that make sense? Because that builds up a sense of self that's beyond being defined by just the role we're playing.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. I think maybe it had something to do with, like you said, the ego can go both ways.
Yep.
Maybe not feeling connected to anything else, which is why I had no sense of identity, because I had nothing to connect to. But I think this all plays in with spirituality. I think it all plays in with the paranormal and why we even have spirits that are around us, whether you believe in ghosts or not. And most people believe in something, there has to be a reason why that part of someone has chosen to remain. Maybe it still wants to be part of the collective consciousness of everyone else. I mean, it boggles your mind when you think about it. But I know for me, it was becoming a mother kind of established me as connected to someone else. And it was a great thing. And even with your story, I mean, a lot of this happened when you were trying to help your son. This whole
absolutely
everything came about. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, when we love someone the way a parent loves a child, that enlarges us. That enriches us. I have a friend who didn't become a father until he was in his 50s. He married a woman quite a bit younger and in her late 30s, and they adopted. And he said, I can't believe I waited so long to do this. This is the greatest gift my life has ever been given. And he's an extremely successful person and a songwriter and all this and record producer and, you know. But raising a child is just the most extraordinary thing he's ever done. Because I think we learn as much from them as they learn from us. So being connected like that on this earth is very powerful. Some people are connected like that with great passion and focus and purpose to their work, to the work they do in the world. But being connected, I think, is a very important thing, very, very powerful.
Well, kind of everything we're talking about are various forms of connection and various levels of connection.
Yes.
And then how you interpret it. I think that brings us back to kind of the central thesis of your book, which is back to this notion of coincidences and what they are and what they mean and what can be done. I think maybe one thing we haven't really exactly addressed is how can they be fostered? How can positive coincidences be fostered? And before you answer that, I do want to mention, because we haven't talked about it, we got to give the facts on the ground periodically. We are talking with the great Gloria Loring about about her life, but in particular about her book, which is really just quite wonderful and very profound. I don't use that word really very lightly. And the book is Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, Reflections on Daytime Dramas and Divine Intervention. And it is really quite something. And also, to get at any and all info, music, information, the book, appearances, and the like, we encourage everyone to go check out Gloria's excellent site, and it's simply GloriaLoring.com. And there's all kinds of good information on there. And wanted to be sure to mention that explicitly. Now, as to your, back to the matter of coincidence, and in particular perhaps how they can be fostered.
Yeah. Well, my own understanding and belief is we will find what we look for. If we look for goodness, we will find it. I actually at one point was thinking of calling my blog Looking for the Good. There is so much good in the world. There is so much comfort. There is so much encouragement. We're often the ones who separate ourselves from the clues and kindnesses that are coming our way by not believing perhaps that we are worthy of it in some way. We separate ourselves from goodness. I used to have ways that I did that for myself because of my childhood and my whatever, things I had gathered, ideas I'd gathered along the way. I thought that nothing I did was good enough. So I was constantly on the lookout for any kind of criticism, any slight, somebody just shifting their eyes, and I would think, oh, they don't like me. I've disappointed them. And I would become defensive. And the other thing was I thought, well, no one understands me. These were ideas, they're called personal myths in psychology, that I held within myself. And so I was always looking for the fact that people wouldn't understand me and that I would be separated from them. And when that changed, and when I realized that everywhere I go, I'm home, and everyone I'm with is a friend on some level or other, whether they like me or not, they're still my friend, you know, where I can go anywhere in the world and feel that I am at home in a sense, you know, that because I'm at home within myself and I bring home with me and I'm willing to meet people open-eyed and open-hearted. So the more we look for the good, the more we will find it. Now, I looked it up the other day about, you know, sort of positive psychology. There's much more emphasis nowadays on this. They used to only be looking at the aberrant behavior and the way the mind would get messed up. But there's more and more study now about positive psychology. And they found that there are good reasons to have my attitude of looking for the good. And that is people who tend to look with positive eyes on their life, on the people around them, enjoy better health. They enjoy better relationships. They have more success at work. Every measure of a successful and happy life is improved when we look for the good, when we look for the goodness in other people, when we look for the good in a circumstance, and even the most difficult circumstance. I mean, tragedies, great tragedies, can be turned to good. If we look at them and say, instead of, oh, why me? We say, yes, why me? What is this asking of me? What is this bringing into my life? What challenge is this presenting that I can rise to? It might be forgiveness. It might be patience. It might be compassion. It might be thoughtfulness or kindness. And every time I struggle with something that just goes around and around in my head and my heart, I know that it's asking something of me that I haven't risen to before. And so the more meaning we look to in our lives, trying to, what can this mean for me? How can I use this to expand my life, my sense of being? The richer and more abundant our lives are.
That is absolutely fascinating. What you're talking about, like putting out positive energy, learning from bad experiences, looking at things through with a positive spin instead of a negative spin. I have been a Debbie Downer for much of my life, and it never got me anywhere. It was really nothing. And just an example, Gloria, with me and Eric, when I started working with Eric, he was so sure of everything, and he still is. Very positive, and no, this is going to happen. No, this is the way it is.
And isn't he just annoying?
Totally.
I'm as irritating
right.
as hell.
Oh, but you have no idea. But he's right. He just, even with me, he's like, of course you'll get this. Of course you deserve it. You have to start thinking of yourself in a different way. You have to think this is going to happen. And the thing is everything he's said so far has come to pass. Whereas things that a year ago I would not have even, to write a book, I wouldn't have even attempted it because
yes.
I would think, well, I can't do this. But Eric has this more positive outlook. I mean, his tenacity is amazing, first of all. But he's right. He has such a more positive look, and if something bad happens, he just kind of moves on and keeps going. And it's really great because with me, I'm like, oh, woe is me. And I'm starting to learn that because a lot of good things have happened. I've adopted an attitude of gratitude, and I'm becoming more thankful for what I have instead of upset with what I don't have. And it seems to be working. And a lot of that is I do have an adult son who's moved on, and now I'm starting to worry about him being out in the world while I'm still taking care of little ones. And I tell you, it gives me a new perspective. I worry about him going through what I went through at that age. And so I'm trying to be more positive and putting it out there. And it seems to work. It really seems to work.
Isn't that surprising?
I love it.
Well, it's interesting when I hear you say that, you know, on the outer levels, as far as people who met me, I was very cheerful and very gung-ho and very friendly and trying, but my inner sense of self, I mean, even as you were talking, I just flashed back 15 years ago. I had a women's retreat at my home. I had just moved up here to the mountains, and I loved my mountain home, and I invited a bunch of girlfriends, and we had a weekend, and one of them is a psychic, and she did readings. She said, my contribution to the weekend is I'll do readings for everybody. And she and I are in the other room here, and she's doing a reading on me, and she said, I want you to know you are a teacher. And I started sobbing, and I said, no, I'm not. No, I can't be. I'm not. Because my sense of self was such, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. And this was before I started this whole process with the book. And about a year later is when I started writing the book. And she said, no, you are a teacher, and you need to stop saying no, because you are going to find your way into it. You have great things to teach. You just need to start believing it. I mean, that's only 15 years ago for me. So, you know, there's always more. You know, it's not like I had this outlook all my life. This has been growing. And the more it gets its little roots in me, the bigger this tree of self-knowledge becomes. And the more I can speak from my true heart about it. And it's so exciting to do that.
It's fascinating.
Well, it really is. And you're not only articulate and present it well, but it seems so natural. You know, I had to intellectually say, wow, based on my understanding of Gloria's life and her biography and the things she says about herself, she did not always have it together like this. So,
no.
It really is amazing the level how smooth it is and how enthusiastic it is. And it sounds like this is who you've been your entire life. So, I mean, that really is amazing, and it's very encouraging. And I'm sure you are an outstanding teacher and motivator. I mean, because, gosh, I feel motivated, you know, from just from speaking to you.
And you were already a positive person.
I was already generally positive just because, you know, you can be positive, you can be negative, and being negative sucks. So I'm just going to be positive, you know? I mean, that's kind of really how, you know, it's not such a inherent
said,
or
so
magnanimous
cheerful.
Thing. It's just like, God, you know, I better be positive because
if
I'm not, things
recently.
Won't happen.
Somebody said to me recently, you're so cheerful. And I said, well, the alternative's not much fun. You know, why not?
Exactly. And the one other observation, just because unbelievable. This, I think I say this almost every week. I don't always probably really mean it, but this is about the fastest hour ever. So there are no better signs than that. But what kept coming, the term, the phrase that kept popping into my head as you were talking, not about as you are now, but your past was people pleaser. And it seems to me that that was something that you had to overcome. And I'm sure you are pleasing people much more now that you kind of threw away. This is very Buddhist. You gave away the need. You relinquished the need to please people.
Yes.
And now you please them much more.
Well, I think because I think it's easier to be pleasing or pleasant to people when we are pleasing to ourselves. And when we start to speak and live from our own internal integrity, from a place of wholeness instead of a place of, you know, who was it? Oh, dear, a friend years ago, I was reading this book, and she said, I know, I'm just so needy. I said, yeah, the thing a man really wants is to go home to his talk to his guy friend and say, oh, I met the most fabulous needy woman today. You know? I mean,
oh,
we all want to be with people who bring their whole selves into the room. You can feel the energy of a person who is at peace with their soul when they come into the room, and you can feel the energy of someone who is at war with themselves, who doesn't like themselves. And so, yes, it's more easy to be pleasing, pleasant, whatever those words are, when we bring the whole integrity of full spirit into a room with us, when we come prepared to meet everybody eye to eye, heart to heart.
Wow. Well, what an amazing hour. We could certainly go on and on and on, and I very much hope that we can speak again. What a pleasure to speak with you and get to know you a little bit, Gloria. I mean that really sincerely, and I hope everyone goes out and picks up the book, Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous. It's both a really interesting and fun story from the inside show business perspective, but much more importantly, it's very, very wise.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak a little more in depth about the subject of spirit and both in this life and beyond it. And you know, I'm not a student of much of the stuff beyond it, except the few experiences I've had. But life is just this great, extraordinary mystery, and I love the opportunity to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, and you know, I think Teresa really got a lot out of this too. I have that sense.
Oh, absolutely. I could talk with you for hours. I'm so impressed with you. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful conversation, and the ideas I put out, and I can't wait to finish the book, and everybody should read it. It's absolutely amazing. I think that being the person that you are, being somebody who is in the spotlight, who worked in the public, and, of course, you had this wonderful career as well, but maybe some of that positive admiration that you were getting from the public and the fans, maybe that fed into your spirit, and maybe that's why your words are so powerful and your ideas come across so well, and you're giving back. I feel that that's what this book is doing. It's like giving back to all those who sent positive vibes your way, and you're giving it back, and we appreciate that so much. And it's been a fascinating hour talking with you, Gloria.
Well, thank you so much. It's just absolutely my pleasure, and I hope we will get a chance to talk again. I just so enjoyed talking with both of you.
Thank you so much. All right, have a great week, everybody.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back on. Yeah,
absolutely.
Good night, everybody. Good night,
okay,
Gloria.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.